What does a fueling plan look like for completing a 100-mile ultra marathon? What are the elements that affect a fueling plan, especially if you're out there on the trails for more than 24 hours? Well, listeners, in today's episode, we are talking about my recent 100-mile race and thought it would be timely to have this conversation for our 100th episode of the Inside Sports Nutrition podcast. If you're new here, welcome. We are your source for all things sports nutrition. And if you're returning to our show, we just want to give an extra shout out to you all for being a fan of the show. Thank you so much for joining us today. This show is hosted by myself, Dina Griffin, and my co-host, Bob Sibahar. We are both registered dietitians and board-certified specialists in sports dietetics with combined professional experience exceeding 40 years. We're here to translate nutrition and sport research to real life and give you some awesome interviews with a variety of experts to enhance your knowledge, optimize your health, fitness, and athletic performance. On today's episode, we are chatting more about my intended fueling plan for running a challenging ultra marathon in Steamboat Springs, Colorado, the Run Rabbit Run race. Now, that race had about a 30% dropout rate. So, did I make it to the finish line? How about that fueling and nutrition plan? Did I consume 90 grams of carbohydrate like the guidelines suggest? Well, there were kinks in the plan, just like with most ultra marathons. For any of you who are experienced in that area or curious about it, you'll want to just tune in to hear some of my story. And I am writing some posts over on my blog over on nutritionmechanic.com if you want to hear more details. So before we get to the show, real quick, want to mention Bob's new course over at Energy Performance featuring the very informative topic of eliminating GI distress in endurance athletes. So you'll want to check that out to get more info, and especially if you have been dealing with GI distress in the past, how to remedy that situation for future endeavors. All right, let's get on to episode number 100. Thank you again and enjoy the show.
Well, Dina, I am so exhausted just hearing about your wonderful, wonderful 100-mile race report. And I know we're going to chat about that today, but how are you feeling today?
Bob, I'm excited. Well, for one, because we haven't met in a few weeks, yeah. You know, just as we're recording this, it's good to see you. And yeah, I have the post-race high or whatever you call that. It's more high than down. So that's good. And yeah, physically feeling good, mentally feeling good.
Awesome. Which usually doesn't happen after you run 100 miles, but you know, so let's give our listeners kind of a little background. So Dina ran Run Rabbit Run, the 100-mile race in Steamboat Springs on September 15th/16th. And, you know, looking at the profile, Dina, I don't even know if you had any flat terrain at all. Maybe it was like at the start line.
We're like 100 meters.
Yeah.
Because then it went straight up the ski mountain.
I mean, it's amazing. This looks like a devil course just looking at the profile. I mean, I think the website said 20,000 feet of climbing, but I know you had 16,000 feet of climbing in 100 miles. And like, that's no joke, listeners. If you've ever played with that, and let's just put it in context, you know, what's the context? What's the elevation in Steamboat? Is that where they sit at? 8?
Steamboat is, I think, around 6,700 in the town.
Okay.
Yeah. And then this course goes up to, I think the high point is 10,500-ish.
Gotcha. But it looks like, I mean, you bounced all over the place, obviously, from the course profile. But what a challenging, you know, when people take on 100-mile races, and I know this isn't your first one, but you know, you probably wouldn't choose a course profile like this because this is no joke. And I look at it, you know, I put my coaching hat on, my physiologist hat on. I'm like, okay, energy expenditure wise, economy of movement wise, there is a lot going on because there's a lot of climbing. There's a lot of descending, which is going to cause some serious muscle damage. There's not a lot of flat. Like, this makes it really challenging from a physical preparation perspective. But since our podcast is all about sport nutrition, I look at this now, put my sport dietitian hat on, and I'm like, oh my gosh, this could be a fueling nightmare because there's so many ups and so many downs. And really quick, before we get into your experience and dissect this, listeners, if you don't know what I'm talking about, a lot of people think it's really easy to eat when you're power hiking up a climb. It's not. Yeah. And then they think it's really easy to eat on a descent. It's not, because your heart rate is still elevated. And that's when your heart rate is elevated, you have blood shunting from your gut. It goes to your working muscles. It's extremely difficult to fuel yourself both up and down, unless you've stopped, right? And that's why I mentioned in the beginning, wow, there's no flat area. I'm like, where did you feed? How did you feed? So I just am so looking forward to getting in this a little bit more and in depth with you. So give us an idea, like what was happening, you know, before the race? What was going on with you? Did you full on taper? How was your body? How was your mental capacity?
I mean, I did do about a 2-week taper plan, and I do work with a coach whom mm-hmm. I've worked with for, gosh, almost 9 years now, since the Leadville race in 2014. Yeah. Someone who knows me pretty well, but you know, everyone's definition of taper is a little different. So there's still intensity and some running volume in there. But Bob, there was a little bit of a kink in that week leading up to the race, in that I caught a head cold about 3 days beforehand. And I got it from the other member of the household who is a teacher, and you know, he got it from those kiddos, we think. Anyways, the cold went around, and so that put a little damper on the mood, and just the, like, you know, when you get sore throat and the headache, the congestion, all that stuff in the days before any kind of race. I mean, it tinkers with your psychology a little bit, but also just feeling some low appetite, a little bit of extra fatigue there. And then with all the race planning, last minute stuff, I'm not the best organizer of things. So I'm kind of a last minute put together all the drop bag things and check the list last minute. So anyway, that was a little bit of a kink there in those couple days before the race began on September 15th.
You know, it's an interesting kink though. And I want to talk about that a little bit because, yeah, sometimes you can't do much about, you know, getting a cold or getting a sickness from, you know, someone you love and share a household with, and even friends and family or at work or whatever. And I totally get that. That I think is kind of luck of the draw, if you will, right? Because you can keep your immune system functioning and everything. But here's what I wanted to add to that, where, and I know a lot of our listeners who've done this before have gone through it, and certainly maybe not running 100 miles, it doesn't really matter. But sometimes this is what I find as a coach. When you come from kind of a higher volume higher training load, and that could be volume and intensity or a combination of both, high or low. But when you come off of that and into a taper, the body, the immune system has to respond just like your physical body has to respond, right? So your immune system responds to now you're resting all of a sudden. I find personally that is a very weak moment for the immune system during the taper. And it's a very, just lesson to our listeners, it's a very difficult time to navigate from a nutrition perspective, because you don't know how to eat for a taper, right? And many people don't eat for a taper and don't change things, as we've heard, you know, over the past few decades. And I think that's what can also contribute to the immune system suppression and possibly getting sick. I mean, I've been there, done that before, but obviously your cold was, you know, obviously you got it from your hubby. So,
but it's true, Bob. Yeah, I agree. I've seen that too in a lot of athletes, that weird transition time. I mean, we're eating a little less usually. So we're getting less of those micronutrients as well. And then, yeah, just coming off the previous block of training and vulnerability of the system. And then you add on mental stress, which we're not able to quantify the impact of that, but it has to make some sort of impact, I think. Totally. So, geez. Yeah, I agree with what you're saying. Just some curiosity around that as well.
Yeah. So our listeners do want to know this. I don't know if you remember, Dee, but so the week leading up to the race, you weren't feeling good. You had a head cold. Your appetite wasn't great. What kind of foods did you try to focus on getting into your body, knowing that you were sick, You had this 100 coming up. You're mentally, you're probably like, oh crap, what is happening here? What did you try to feed your body in that instance?
So it was a little bit more of what I was doing in the sense of like always daily greens, always a yogurt. So some probiotic foods, which we talked about recently in an episode. So like cultured foods, I'm always going to keep protein up. So that was a constant, a little bit more on the fruit, I will say, just trying to get some vitamin C and keep up those kinds of vitamins. Fluids was another thing I tried to really work on, because I'm not a good fluider. Sorry for the made up word. Just sense of thirst isn't excellent. And so that was a very conscious effort to try and like, okay, keep up with fluids, the electrolytes and so on. But yeah, so veg, fruits, I didn't do, you know, like load on the sugary carbs or anything like that, but I did include sweet potato. I had a few toasts in there with breakfast. Okay. But
So how about, so putting you on the spot here, supplements. Did you take any different supplements, or let us know kind of what the routine was that week?
Thank you for asking that. I kept up with omega-3. You know, I did do a trial of beta alanine for this race. So that was, you know, something I had been doing for the few months prior. But I will say I did take some extra vitamin C and zinc. I'm trying to think what else. Oh, well, I don't know if this goes in the semi woo woo category, Bob, but there are some herbal formulations.
You know, I'm all over that.
Okay. The cold snap.
Oh, I've heard of
which
that.
Which is
a
blend, I think, of different Chinese herbs. I have done that in the past. So that, you know, we purchased an extra bottle for race week. Yeah. And it was kind of like the thought where you almost try anything to just feel a little bit better. Trying not to do excessive, like, okay, I'll eat dirt from, you know, Iowa, if that's going to help me. But yeah, I think, and then there were just some over-the-counter stuff just so I could sleep. Was not happening very well.
Well, thank goodness you didn't have anything worse than that. But no, I hear you with that, with the cold and with the supplements and everything. You're just like, you're going to throw everything you can at that monster, and you're not going to know what really helps it. But listen, it's always a combination of sleep and food and supplements and water and rest, just overall rest and de-stress. And yeah, it is a tough time, but it sounds like you covered your bases. I do. Before we get to the race, though, interestingly, you told me, and I'm going to tease everyone, because listeners, we're going to do a future episode on this, and we're actually going to broadcast this on our YouTube channel. But Dina, you did a metabolic efficiency test the week before, and you showed me the data, and we kind of chatted about it a little bit. And that's what sparked us to really say, you know what, we need to share this with our listeners, because there's so much fascinating data. But take us through like what you did briefly with that metabolic efficiency test, and maybe even the why behind it. So if our listeners are like, do we need to do a metabolic efficiency test the week before a race? Take us through that.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you too for asking that, Bob. I mean, the interest was to get a more quantitative look at energy expenditure, carbohydrate to fat oxidation rates at different hiking grades. Now, again, this is on a treadmill in a lab type setting. I don't have a portable thing to take out on the trails. But so what was going on at a hiking intensity? So the treadmill I used goes up to about 15% grade. Unfortunately, like with the Run Rabbit Run course, there's some 30 and 40% grades. So I can really mimic that, but just trying to get a feel, knowing my caliber of athleticism, I am not running a whole 103 miles. We're doing a lot of hiking.
I don't think anybody could run that course fully. There's no way.
There are a couple athletes out there that were screaming down the trails, but that's like the top 1%.
Yeah.
Anyways, so running at an effort that I felt like when I would have some flat sections or some downhills, what would the running energy expenditure look like, or just efficiency in terms of fuel use. And so looking at that data, getting a sense then of a range of calories, carbohydrate calories to try and consume ish, right, over the 100 miles. So yeah, that test was different 4-minute stages, different intensity levels, hiking, we'll call it power hiking, and then running. That was
in your pre-test protocol was a little bit different than what you'd normally recommend.
Thank you.
Because you were trying to elucidate a few things and answer some questions the week before the race, which, you know, listeners, this is the beauty about testing. And when you test with a professional who knows what they're doing, we can tinker the protocol based on the race or the event that you're doing to make it most applicable and most useful for you. So what was that pre-test protocol?
I simulated most of what I was going to consume on race morning prior to the race beginning. So we call that a fed test, mm-hmm. or, you know, kind of race simulation to a degree.
Yeah.
And so I had, you know, my usual coffee, and I had a Ucan shake with some added protein mm-hmm. in it. So yeah, that was not a fasted test. It was simulating what I would eat on race morning and then seeing how that fuel would work for the
duration. Which is really interesting, because when I put my eyes on it, my eyes kind of bugged out of my head really quick. And that's why we're going to really pick this apart. And we're going to video this on our YouTube channel. So listeners, you can basically, it's going to kind of be like an armchair episode where Dina and I just talk about her test, and we just talk about different things that both of us see and maybe come to a conclusion. Maybe we don't come to a conclusion, but it's fascinating to me because I wasn't expecting what I saw initially. And granted, I just saw it for a few minutes, so I can't really wrap my hand around it yet, but I cannot wait for us to break that down and roll up our sleeves with that and just share our thoughts with our listeners. So that'll be exciting. Really quick before we get to the race, did you feel like doing that test was helpful for planning your nutrition?
I did, Bob, because it's like the data kind of reinforce what you know you want to have as your undercurrent for a fueling plan. We always need a backup plan. We need to have flexibility, but seeing what my body was doing, even in this lab simulation type setting, it was really helpful to know, because what if it's a 200 calorie difference or whatever, you know, it's giving you this framework to kind of come back to. And yeah. So even if it's not 100% in how it unfolds, at least it's guiding you. And also, mm-hmm. Bob, just throwing in like the menopause card here, because I'm not 30 years young, is just seeing over this last year where, if it's okay to talk about, you know, like I formally entered the post-menopause phase. And I have noticed appetite changes and some things that have happened during training and things. So this testing was really helping me see where's the body as I go into this kind of endurance event, and keeping those things in mind to, again, just help guide the plan.
Yeah. Dina, here's a question just as an offshoot. Did you know, because we've known each other for a long time, do we have data for you? Metabolic efficiency test data in your pre, peri, and postmenopausal years?
I think so, yeah.
I think we do too. Yeah. That just gave me a great idea for another future episode, right?
Well, it's all nerdy stuff, but yeah, nerdy, we have some data.
But our female listeners, I think they'd be super, super kind of just enamored on maybe if we see some changes. And granted, there are so many dependent variables that can change. We know that, but so it's not going to be exact, but I would just, you know, if we can pull some of those tests from each kind of phase of your life, that'd be kind of interesting.
That might be a fun thing to do. Yeah.
Yeah.
I hadn't thought of that.
So listeners, stay tuned for that. Also, okay. We have so many things to share, but okay. So let's get to the race. So pre-race, you had your breakfast, which consisted of what?
So around 5 a.m., I think it was 5 a.m. or 4:30 in that window, Bob. I'm a banana peanut butter, kind of hit a little bit of that first thing with some coffee.
Yep.
some other fluid, and then around 45 to 60 minutes before, I had 2 scoops of the You Can Energy Plus Protein Cookies and Cream flavor.
Okay.
With a little soy milk and a little extra whey protein.
Okay. Did you do any other supplements?
Like,
do you usually take your supplements in the mornings? Or?
I had the beta alanine, just like, you know, it's probably not a huge difference there on race day because it's a loading thing. And rhodiola, which I always take in the morning.
Yep.
I did take a B complex as well.
Okay. Okay.
And I believe that was it.
All right. So race started at about what time?
So they let I call it the elders. They let the elders start an hour before the non-elders. So women 50 and older.
Basically anyone over 40, 30, 20? No.
I know.
I get you.
Women over 50 and men over 60 could start an hour early, which I think is cool, actually.
Yeah,
so it gave
sure.
us an extra hour. And
for
just
sure.
Real quick, funny story, because one of the race directors was there at the start. Well, they both were. But the main race director, he said, "So is this your first 100?" And I said, "No." "Well, which one did you do?" And I answered, Leadville. It was a long time ago. And he said, "Well," and this is at the start line, like 10 minutes before, "this race is a lot harder than Leadville." It's, and he was totally serious and like the worst news ever you want to hear from when you're about to start the race, even though, of course, I know it's a different profile and everything.
Right, right.
But it was just like what to not say to your participants, you know, a few minutes. Because it was just like, "Oh, you're going to fail," kind of language and mood and everything. So I had to regroup and just shake that off. Because I don't think he meant anything negative, but it was just the way it came out. But of course, this race is different than Leadville. You have a longer cutoff time.
Right,
so even if it is technically some harder climbs and whatever, I don't know. I don't think you compare very well hundreds. They're just all different.
You can't. Yeah. There's so many variables in that. And I'm sure we wouldn't see Ken and Marilee in Leadville kind of with that statement, but it sounded like that was more of a pride statement where he was
"Hey,
we
thought
this
one's
a lot harder."
I think that's a little bit of what was happening there.
Yeah, but still, things you don't say to an athlete right before a race.
It was okay. I had all my crew there and they were like, "Hey, just shake that off. What a silly guy." And we just moved on.
Oh my gosh.
But yeah, it was pretty cold at the start. I think in the
40s.
Which is nice. And it starts up the ski mountain there in Steamboat Springs.
So you're power hiking to start with.
Yeah, it's about 5 miles up. Power hiking for sure.
Yeah.
And it was a small group of us elders, I think less than 10, 10 of us. So we spread out pretty quickly. I was not really chatting with anyone after about a mile and just hoofing it up the hill.
It's usually what happens, right? Especially when you have an uphill start. It's like you have the best intentions, but then you're like, "Wait a second, I have to breathe. Like I can't waste this on a lot of conversation right now." Yeah.
And I'm not a big chatter anyway.
Yeah. So. How long did you go solo until you're able to pick up pacers?
So I went to the Dry Lake aid station, which is around mile 45-ish, 46-ish.
Okay.
And that's where you could get your first pacer. Although I forgot this detail, they let the elders have a pacer for the whole 100 if you want.
Oh, really? Okay.
I don't think there were many of us did that. So anyway, I got my first pacer around mile 46, 47-ish in that time frame. And then I had 4 pacers, Bob.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow,
and
that's
my
great.
friend Kim, whom I recently crewed for her long path FKT back in July, she was with me for the last 50K of the race, which is amazing.
Nice. Yeah.
Super amazing.
Oh, okay. So let's go through this. Before you picked up pacers, what was your nutrition and hydration like? Because you had to carry things and
I know. I had my pack loaded up. So I had water in the bladder, which, to be honest, I didn't drink too much of because it was so cold. And I used a flask with soup. the scratch high carb mix that had either scratch hydration added just for a little extra electrolyte or the precision fuel and hydration electrolyte 1000 mix.
Yep.
So some liquid nutrition. And then I did just some nibbles of a few different bars throughout that first 45 miles. I mean, I love little fig bar kind of thing, little bite of peanut butter jam sandwich. So it's nibbles.
Yeah. Well, because you also said being sick before the race and you didn't have much of an appetite the week before, did you also not have much of an appetite during the race because of that?
I mean, I feel like that played a role. So it, yeah, definitely that in conjunction with it being pretty cold at night for this first night down in the 40s, 30s. And then like the second day was, it got pretty toasty up there. And so I feel like with the cold and just some weather changes and the mountain, just elevation in general, all these things, I think affected appetite.
Because you were, I mean, based on your testing, based on your experience in the past, you were shooting for about how many calories of, you know, per hour were you trying to do or going into it thinking I was going
to
do?
I mean, I was thinking 150 to 200 based on data and based on what I had practiced in training. And, you know, in reflection, hindsight, this is one of those things like, well, okay, the appetite was a little low. My pacers did a great job. Kim did a great job trying to get me to eat a little more, drink a little more, but I know there were some hours where that calorie goal was not met in terms of some under, but I mean, I didn't suffer any GI issues. I felt like I was steadily moving forward. Where there were times, and this isn't the competitive thing, but there were times where we, you know, we did pass some other people who were sitting down or taking naps and things. So I felt like I kept moving forward, at least.
Did you feel like you consumed less during the day or during the nighttime hours?
The nighttime.
Nighttime, which totally happens. Circadian rhythm, right? And that's kind of it's a danger zone because especially if you have 100 like this, and the cutoff was 37 hours.
For our elder group.
So you think about that, listeners, you're like, okay, circadian rhythm is kicking in. It wants to rest and digest during the night, but you're trying to make a cutoff. What do you do? And that's where I see a lot of the mistakes being made is that, you know, athletes are kind of listening to their bodies when you can't, not at night. Right.
Hard,
and I love what you said about the nibbles, because that's all what it all is. It, you know, you kind of take some sips and you take some nibbles and that is more of a success path for nighttime running.
And then, you know, that can carry over a little bit in the second day for some of us. You know, some might feel like, ooh, great, the sun's up. I'm hitting the breakfast burritos and all that, which I did take advantage of, you know, around 8 or 9 a.m. There was a breakfast burrito to die for. and I needed a little more of that savory. I think too, but I had some carryover of that lower appetite into the second day. So there's a little bit of issue there. And just, again, I don't know how much of that was the cold affecting desire, but.
Okay. So we've got like the real food you're talking about. Did you have any Yucan during?
I used a Yucan Edge during, but none of the other liquid energy powder.
And did you use our favorite ketone ester, Delta G?
Yes. I want to share that real quick. So in the nighttime, I used half the performance Delta G twice. So I had a whole bottle separated by about 3 or 4 hours. And then on that second day, I can't remember exact mileage, but I did do one of the coffee booster shots, most of it anyways. And that I felt no problem staying awake.
Nice. So that cognitive effect hit you. That's what I'm seeing more and more. It's not so much a physical as it is a cognitive boost, right?
Definitely. Yeah. No falling, Bob. I thought I was
superwoman
those trails and like fly down fall, but there were no falls. So that was cool.
Nice. Yeah.
But
how many did you kind of add up how many calories? So, you know, you were talking about kind of trying to shoot for between 150 to 200 calories per hour. So our listeners are wondering, what did she really get then? What were your total per? And again, this is I mean, it's, I don't know. What was your finish time? What would you cross in?
So finish was 34 hours and 19 minutes.
So let's call it 34 and change.
Yeah.
Do you have an average calorie intake per hour? Did you figure that out yet?
I don't have an exact, but I'm thinking it was around 120.
Okay. So listener, she wasn't far off, but this is a huge lesson here. I mean, I wasn't there and I don't, you know, I'm not inside your body feeling how you felt there, but you know, so you think about it and you're like, okay, you were aiming for 150 to 200. You came in lower than that. There are so many questions that can come out of that. Like, oh, could you have felt better? Could you have whatever it is, if you would have hit your target goal? Well, we don't know the answers to those questions. And I think the biggest curveball you have is that illness, right? Because that is going to change everything during the race.
Yeah.
Yeah. But still, I mean, you still, I'm proud of you for, proud of you for finishing for sure, but I'm proud of you for keeping up that amount of calories based on having an illness beforehand. I do want to ask you really quick, fluid wise, do you think you kept up with your fluid needs or did it get worse as it went on?
I tried to pay attention to that. I feel on this, you know, like those last 10, 12 hours, there was a little bit lower intake than, but you know, like I remember peeing a few times and some of that, but I think that was under a bit, like probably 4 to 6 ounces per hour under, as a ballpark. But, and of course, trying to drink some liquid calories, which I tried, but I remember
it's Kim, hard, like, isn't it?
Drink a little more.
Yeah.
So
I think, and I've been there, done that too. And I continue to live that life, but I think a good rule of thumb is, again, like I'm not the best hydrator like you, but I try to make a really good point of doing even during the day. But I remind myself, you know, if I can just sip on things instead of pressuring myself to gulp. And I think when you put yourself out there on a trail for 100 or more, I think the mantra has to become sip instead of gulp, because the gulping is too much. Like mentally, you're like, no, I can't handle that. I can't fit my stomach, whatever. But if you say sip, something psychologically clicks and you're like, oh yeah, I can do that. Like, you know, what's the difference between 3 sips and 1 gulp? Nothing, except psychologically you're able to get the 3 sips in. So I think that's a good mantra to have. And it sounds like you kind of utilize some of that.
Definitely love the sip, sip, nibble, nibble.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
So
I was going to ask you, did you have any caffeine? Like you had the Delta G.
Yeah, the Delta G coffee booster. This was from the archives. Oh. Remember the first endurance company used to sell pre-race capsules, which I wish, please, first endurance people, bring those back. Kim had saved from her old bottle from like 2021 a couple of those for me. So I did have a couple of those.
Love it.
The listeners, that's just like a caffeine/stimulant sort of capsule.
Yeah.
But, and then I did have a few of the Scratch Energy Chews with caffeine.
Okay.
But that, I didn't do as much caffeine as I thought I would.
Yeah. That's interesting, isn't it?
Yeah.
Which, I mean, who knows? Like I said, such a curveball with the illness, because who knows? Like even, I don't know, me personally, I mean, I've raced, you know, before ill and it's not fun. And I can't even remember if I did caffeine then or not, but I think just your affinity for certain foods and drinks and everything goes away a little bit when you're sick.
Yeah.
So you may not have the same things you're used to.
I was just going to add, I did try a couple of the Ricola cough drop things.
Oh, you did?
You know, and that kind of stayed in the cheek for probably 4 hours because I cannot, like, it's so not a fueling
item. Right, right.
And I couldn't, that was in the mix.
Maybe that's the next product that we think about, is developing a hard candy with no colors or dyes or any crap, but it's also a fueling and a electrolyte option.
Oh my gosh.
Did I just
say
that out loud?
Someone just stole the idea.
Maybe I shouldn't have said that out loud.
I'll delete it. But I was just going to say, as we're wrapping up here, Bob, I think it's all good learnings. And I mean, these are things, if you're not doing ultras or 100 miles every year, gosh, I mean, you can't practice all these things when it's only once every few, whatever, infrequent number of years. So I feel very honored to have had the experience. And I will admit, I want to do another one sooner than later, just so they can take fresh learnings forward with where I am right now as a 50-something female athlete.
Nina, be honest with you. Which race did you already sign up for?
I know. Well, yeah, ultra sign up. So there might be other things soon. Planned, but
soon. No, but I mean, yeah. What are the lessons from it? I mean, it sounds like some ways, and you know, I'm extremely proud of you for finishing. You know, because just the immune system thing can totally derail a very quickly. So props to you for doing that. Virtual hug to you for that. But what other things really stood out as we're wrapping up?
Yeah, I think some of that, just keeping in mind flexibility, needing to try other foods. I wish I had had my crew. I wish I had given them a few things that I know the aid stations didn't have. I just didn't think to do that. Just some other backup items. And I think, you know, appreciating your support team, your crew team is really important because they're essential to the success. And, you know, you keep moving forward, Bob, and you get to the finish. But enjoying that time and being fortunate to have done that, I think, with the experiences along the way is just a good life lesson anyway. But
one foot in front of the other, right? I think that's what a lot of ultra runners are all about. It's just keep one foot in front of the other. It doesn't matter how fast, how slow it goes. You just have to keep putting that one foot in front of the other.
Keep doing it.
Yeah. Yep. I love it. Well, what a great, Bob. Successful race. Yeah. I'm so proud of you. And hopefully listeners, you were able to glean some golden nuggets from this. So even if it was just more, you know, entertaining to hear about Dina's race, I think, you know, we tried to pull out a lot of golden nuggets for you based on her experience. And of course, remember, everybody is N of one, but you know, the reason why we do these things to ourselves is to be able to share these experiences with you all also, to try to teach you about kind of what about our podcast is all about, right? Bringing research to real life. And these are the real life strategies that, you know, you and I walk through every single day, aren't they?
Yes. And we are so happy to be able to share these things.
We are, for sure. All right, listeners. So Dina, thank you very much. Listeners, stay tuned for a future episode on our YouTube channel where we will break down Dina's metabolic efficiency test that she did in a fed state prior to the race. So that will be coming out in the near future. And stay tuned for our next episode.
Thank you, everyone. All right, if you made it this far, thank you so much for tuning in to this week's episode to hear more about my 100-mile experience recently. You can follow along on my blog over at Nutrition Mechanic. And hey, I have a quick favor for you. If you are willing and able to help support our podcast, you have a couple options. One is to go to your podcast platform on Apple Pods or Spotify and leave us a 5-star rating. That helps us grow, and that is very appreciated. The other option is to leave a contribution for us. We are a small operation. We are self-funded. It's just the three of us, Bob, myself, and our awesome podcast publisher, Don. So if you have a couple bucks to share, you can make a donation over at insidesportsnutrition.com/support. Any kind of donation helps us continue to keep on keeping on, and we love that. Thank you so much. Stay tuned for next week's episode. We are diving in to the topic of gastrointestinal distress. So you didn't hear a ton of that about my 100-miler, but it is super common in ultra marathons and ultra events. So we're going to talk about reasons why that happens. It's a preventable occurrence, and you need to know more about it. So stay tuned for that one coming up. If you'd like more information about the services that we respectively offer, head over to Energy Performance, ENRGPerformance.com, to find out more about Bob and his services, and myself, NutritionMechanic.com. The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are solely those of the hosts and the guests involved and do not represent a replacement for medical consultation with your doctor. The information and opinions provided here are not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease or medical condition. This podcast is for information, education, and entertainment purposes only.